of knowing.
All right, man. Welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 617. It's Jason Lindgren and Athan Comente returns. He's been on a number of episodes. Maybe I'll get that information as we go along here. Anyhow, we're going to talk about the Sky Clock. It is my point of view that if nothing else was going on in our world this year, it would still be a big year due to the energies from above. But we're going to get into that. Welcome, Jason.
And a very lovely good morning.
Is there anything we should cover before we jump in with Athan? Should we say anything about Masterpiece? Not specifically, but in general?
There are some things going on with Masterpiece that pretty much prove that it's the real deal. And we will have more info to come as we can discuss it.
Right. Some things that have gone on are undeniably the powers that be wanting to erase Masterpiece. And not only that, other things that we have heard just underscore that this is the real deal. And I guess that's all we're going to say for right now. Anyhow, let's just jump in. You ready, Jason?
Yep, let's do it.
All right. Welcome back, Athan. Good to have you back.
Hey, guys. Great to be here. Again, always great. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to get into the energies at hand. I am of a mind that we're probably going to see some things going on before the end of February. So let's just pick up with where we are. Is that a good place for us to start?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, so February is the sort of shifting energies, well, the first shifting energies of the year, but it's definitely an important month there astrologically. So we can start with Mars being more of a short-term thing. So we've had Mars retrograde, and this has been going on since around December 7th, give or take. So this only happens once every 2.5 years. And Mars is, you know, that planet of proactivity, of assertiveness. Collectively, it can even be in terms of wars, fighting or agreements, you know, a lot of that kind of fiery side to things. So retrograde's meant that it's been good to go back and maybe finalize some of this stuff, complete it, be more flexible. Usually tends to put more of a back burner on these things as well, which we noticed, I would say, because last year was quite fiery in general with, you know, Ukraine and the rest of it, and almost not silent, but definitely in that back burner there since December. So that along with the other stuff. So I think that's, you know, what we're expecting between now and February 23rd, which is the remainder of the retrograde. Once Mars does go direct, we can expect to start to implement a lot of the stuff that we've been reconsidering. So again, it's not super significant once every 2.5 years, but you know, it will start to probably put more of an emphasis, you know, if we're talking globally or collectively on these kinds of issues. Again, maybe we'll see some, you know, some resolutions, hopefully, with some of the aggression stuff we've seen internationally. We could see just generally for all of us feeling a little bit more clear about what we want. It's been a time of a little more reflection, having to kind of take a step back with our own assertiveness with things and question it, kind of go back and figure things out there. So a lot of that fiery energy does start to move forward. And February 23rd is the shift with that. Combined with that, Saturn is going into Pisces around that same time, actually, in late February here. So this is more of a bigger picture thing. This is basically the next solid 3 years. That means Saturn's leaving Aquarius, so that concludes what has been really the past 2 solid years of a lot of growth happening with technology, with innovative stuff. I mean, Aquarius is the innovative technological constellation there, and Saturn's been really grounding this and really implementing a lot of the stuff. So that concludes this. If there's anything that's going to happen in regards to innovation, technology that's wrapping up from the past 2 years, we can definitely see that here very shortly. Same with things that involve the sky in any way. So a lot of people are talking about like entities, UFOs, things like this. We'll see, you know, with disclosure and stuff like this. I think all that has really started a 29-year cycle. I think we've just started a 29-year technological cycle with Saturn in Aquarius, because that's how long it takes for Saturn to come back. So 29 years from now, we'll complete the cycle. So it really is from that bigger picture. But the seeds have really been laid here with the innovative stuff. And the last time this was the case was back during the early to mid-90s. So 94 was the last time Saturn was here. And you know, that's when we saw the birth of the internet, really, with chat and everything else, email. So that's what we're expecting, I think, with things like AI, supercomputing, things like this, really, really completely changing the way that we interface and use technology. So that's Saturn finishing Aquarius, but Saturn's going into Pisces. So this is more of blurring the lines, really, with things. So when it comes to institutions, it comes to governments, it comes to basically any kind of, again, system and structure, there's likely to be a sense of uncertainty, kind of lost at sea, feeling like we have to navigate the tides, so to speak. So that's on the challenging front. On the more positive front, I think it's a great time for us individually to like build our soul needs. So what is it we want to see for our own future that's really soul fulfilling for us, and how that might take some time to build, but we could certainly build that over the next few years. And collectively, hopefully we can see some things like starting to help those in need. Pisces, you know, rules things like it rules the drug institutions, it rules, you know, the homeless, it rules those in need. And I think collectively we could see a lot of things starting to get worked on and established there with that. Similar to what we saw for those that follow that kind of thing, you know, mid to late 90s there, we actually saw a whole support and things being put out there, especially from the higher institutions, governments and stuff, to start to fix those kinds of situations. So things like this, we could see a little bit of a renaissance with music and art as well, as Saturn and Pisces can emphasize that. So, but all in all, the way I would classify this February is forward movement with the proactive stuff, more of that fiery energy shifting, moving forward, and finishing up a lot of the innovative stuff from the past 2 years, those foundations being solidified. So some solidification there with that stuff, and starting to build our own soul fulfillments for the future. And things maybe societally we can do that are more soul fulfilling for the world and collectively.
You know, I actually want to back up a little. I meant to start at the beginning of this year because we came through the gates hot. But before I do that, the Athen episodes are on our playlists under Alchemy and Sky Clock. There's a whole bunch of them. But Athen, backing up, I mean, we came to the 1st of January, just things going on. We came into this year hot. And also combined with that, what's been going on with the airplanes? Do you feel like there were direct Sky Clock energies that correlate with what we saw as the new year began, and what's ongoing here with our travel in the sky?
You mean with like the drones and stuff like that?
More specifically, all the plane accidents. I think a few years ago we had like 8 major accidents or something like that in a year, and we're like 50 or I think someone the other day, and don't quote me on this, like 50 or 60 incidents already. And we're not even through the second month of the year here. Do you feel like there are Sky Clock energies that associate with what we're seeing? And I know I asked you 2 things. You know, we kind of came into the year hot, seeing these events, things blowing up and the like. But then almost immediately, air travel became, well, everyone knows what it became.
Right. So, yeah. So the sky is Aquarius, and that's the Saturn. So, yes, Saturn is, we all know Saturn is that restrictive planet. It creates the challenges. It's a builder too. So even with things like aviation and all this, I mean, there's been a lot of progress in terms of fixing these problems. But yes, these are the challenges that we expect when Saturn goes through a specific part. And he's been, like I said, the area of technology and also in the area of all things of the sky. So because he's leaving here at the end of February, and it's a transition. So we're talking like even into March a little bit, okay? But especially we'll need that first new moon after Saturn shift. So we'll have a new moon here. Let's see, which one is it going to be? It's going to be the, yeah, so we're going to need full month of March to kind of let this play out. But basically very soon we're seeing a finishing up of this stuff. So I'm expecting less narrative around drones, disclosures, things like this. Again, big picture though, 29 years, there's going to be developments, just like, you know, there's developments with the internet since 94. And there was a lot of things along the way, but it wasn't like, you know, that beginning foundation of it. So I'm expecting that if there is going to be anything that's going to come out of this, it's all to be established very soon. Like I said, in the next couple months with aviation, probably obviously aviation safety, security, all this stuff, probably getting rolled out, finished up. With the drone stuff, we probably won't hear so much about this. It won't be so much of a narrative post March. So I think after March, if we're trying to, again, predict, which we're just, you know, dealing with probabilities really, but if we are trying to predict with probability, I would say there's a higher probability that these things become less of an issue just around the corner, less of the aviation disasters or problems, and likely also less problems in terms of, you know, any other activity like the drones or things like this, in terms of fears and whatever's been going on there with that, that's likely to also conclude.
So you're associating the kind of airy up in the sky things. Is it exclusively to Saturn?
Well, it's exclusively to Aquarius when we look at things collectively. So there's no other constellation that rules the sky as much as Aquarius. So because Saturn's in Aquarius, Saturn's influencing Aquarius. So that means that all things involving the sky are having the influence of Saturn. And that is that challenging energy. So once Saturn does leave, we are far less likely to see those kinds of challenges there.
And what are the dates when Saturn heads into Pisces?
So because we're using true sidereal, there's no like line in the middle of the sky between the constellations, but the halfway point between Aquarius and Pisces is something like when Saturn gets to about February 23rd, okay? But we want to wait for the whole next lunar cycle, because the lunar cycle that we have during this is Aquarian, and that one doesn't end until March 29th. So March 29th, we're going to have our first new moon in Pisces with Saturn in Pisces, and then that's going to be a fresh new energy. So that's why I'm giving it the full month of March to also play out and work things out.
So it'd be really interesting if we saw the whole airlines thing mellow out as Saturn moves out of the air constellation. It'll be interesting to see if that happens. But back to the beginning of the year, was there a big shift as we came into the 1st of January in the energies, in your point of view? And by the way, I should point out to people, Athan uses sidereal astrology, which basically means if he went outside in the evening, he looks up. What you actually see there is what he's using to work with, where there are other methods where people calculate and divide up the sky a bit differently. And I'm not here to tell you one is better than the other, but I kind of gravitate towards sidereal. And by the way, Athan has hit some things right on the head a number of times being with us. But back to the first of the year, were there energy shifts that reflected how we came into the new year so hot?
No, not so much in terms of it being hot. So we were expecting Mars retrograde to play out in the sense of like having to go back and take care of things that weren't taken care of before in the past. And so from that front, I wouldn't say it was hot, but it definitely was about hot things like Mars, like I said, wars, aggression, all that kind of stuff. So that was, you know, emphasized since December in terms of having to be reworked. But no, like this was something that I don't see how anyone, at least with true sidereal, would have foreseen. I could be missing something. But yeah, for those of you who feel like it was hot, I can't see it astrologically there. Most of the, you know, main transformations that we saw astrologically was, again, in general last year. We could say, you know, a big part of it, like we were talking about for so long, was with Pluto, is that the whole restructuring to our systems, as we're now seeing. Hindsight's always 2020, and I had no idea that it was going to be like Trump and all this stuff like coming in and completely transforming like the U.S. system, and we'll see where this goes with other systems. But that was activated in January, was the Pluto side, so the whole restructuring to things, obviously, there. But outside of that, Uranus going direct, again, technological stuff moving forward, things like this, I wouldn't have been able to foretell anything like super fiery or coming out of the gates hot with the astrology.
Well, it seemed like it was just events. And the other thing was the pomp and circumstance around them seemed to be larger than the event itself. It was very, very bizarre. Jason, do you want to ask anything before I start pushing towards the equinox?
If I remember correctly, when you were with us last year, you did think that Trump was going to take the crown, right?
Yeah, mainly because we saw like extreme parallels from late last year to, what was it, 2016, when Trump won the first time?
Yes.
And we also saw, interesting, the feminine energy, right? So at that point when we were talking, we didn't even know Kamala was going to run. But because it looks so similar to 2016, now in hindsight, it makes total sense. So it's almost like, because, you know, I drew that parallel to 2016. And if you look at it, I mean, it was almost like a complete repeat. I mean, you have a strong masculine figure competing against a very strong feminine figure. I mean, a female president, that's as strong as it gets nowadays for feminine energy for politics. And them competing and then the masculine energy winning out. So yeah, so that was actually a pretty good, there was high probability there. And it did play out very close to how we saw it. The details, obviously, like I said before, like the details, we don't know. But generally speaking, that one, there was so much confirmation on it being so similar to 2016 that we were able to make that kind of prediction there.
Now, we know that he's come out of the gate really hitting things hard. Are you seeing anything positive, negative, or indifferent with how he's trying to do things, at least as far as things that we can see in the public?
Yeah. So astrologically, okay, I actually really like what's going on because basically the U.S. has started, like I said, a completely new cycle. It's not only the Pluto return, it's also the progressed lunar cycle. There's a lot of other stuff because I've analyzed the U.S. chart specifically. Obviously, this is going to have ripple effects in the world, but looking at the U.S. exclusively here, it's really a rebirth of the United States. So it's a rebirth of 250 years because it's the first time that Pluto returned, like we've been talking about, complete restructuring. The last time Pluto did this was during the birth of the United States. So what we're really seeing is like a new United States. It could have gone in a number of different directions. And I am personally happy that it did go in this particular direction because it could have really went into some really much, much more worse directions. And that's why I'm optimistic in the sense that to me, it looks very good astrologically that we're having this fresh new start. It's a fresh new start for not only the 250 years, but short term, like the next 29 years specifically. So for the US, what we're seeing is that the next, like, you know, couple years, few years is still like the very beginning of this. But these are basically the seeds that we're seeing for the whole next 29 years for the United States. So a complete restructuring, a complete revamping for how we do things with government. Yeah, it's not all peaches and cream. I get that. But looking at it from that bigger picture, it does look like things are heading in that positive direction.
So do you feel like there's a lot of chatter on the internet and a lot of it by people who pay attention and kind of see the occult side of things? Maybe you could say people who count the ways, as I used to say it, just being aware of the occult things. Do you feel like the energies for the year as a whole back up this kind of rigid, I don't know how to say it, like, you know, rigid formation, like maybe a corporate structure? Or do you feel like it's going the other way where it's loosening and things like tight corporate structures will be much relaxed? You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, so it actually looks more like dismantling, okay, more than anything. Because like I said, like when you're talking about systems and structures, you're including here governments, you're including corporations, you're including everything. And then when you're dealing with Pluto, we're talking about that transformation. So, you know, it looks more like a dismantling and then a rebuilding. That's what it looks like. Now, combine that with the Saturn in Pisces that we were talking about earlier. And that actually is more like dispersing. So that's like if you were to put something in water, like something liquid, and it just kind of disperses into the water because Saturn is the structural planet. So Pluto's in Capricorn, the structural sign, but the structural planet that rules Capricorn is in watery Pisces, dissolving. So it's looking like a restructuring, but at the same time, and I would say specifically with the institutions that already have existed before, so older corporations, more established corporations, you know, obviously governments and things like this, from that standpoint, a restructuring, but things being more dissolving for those existing systems and structures, especially the ones from the past 29 years, by the way, for those that want to draw any parallels with that. But it does look difficult for already established systems, for sure, like across the board. So depending on what we're analyzing, a company, a government, a section of government, whatever, if it's been around for a long time, it's part of the existing establishment, then astrologically, it looks very challenging. It looks like I said, endings and dissolution. But if you're something new, a new company, new industries, new ideas, you know, innovative like this, it looks extremely positive. That would be then the new thing that's coming out of the restructuring. Those would be the things that we're starting to build. So that's, I really mean it when I say, you know, that the transformation.
I don't know if this is possible to look at something like this, but with something like artificial intelligence and the push that's getting behind it, is there a way for you to look at that subject to see what kind of energy would be behind it?
What do you mean? Could you give me an example?
Well, that's just it. I'm not sure if that's something that even would be possible. Is there a way to know just how explosive it might be, what might be possible with it?
Oh, like how powerful the AI can be?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So, all right. So basically think of it this way. I think this is as good as I can convey this. So think of what the internet was in 1994. Now think of how the internet concluded 2 years ago, because that's when we basically maxed out the internet the way we've been using it, according to the astrology, because it's the 29-year cycle, so that like maxed it out. So we're maxed out with like social media and the sort of internet as this sort of research platform and all this. Okay, so what we have now is a brand new thing, the AI. It's still in its infancy, as in it's just now, we're still just now in the beginnings, like I said, and it doesn't even complete the new beginning until a month from now. So now think of where we were in 1994 with the internet, and that's where we are now with AI and supercomputing. So, I mean, it's astronomical. I mean, my mind can't even really like understand it. But I can say this. Look, we're like using an AI like chat, and we had chat like in 1994. We had email in 94. We were still using that. But it's also advanced into things like cell phones and chat. Like, also, I mean, think of how much more advanced we've gotten with just messaging. So we have some messaging features in terms of us interacting with the AI right now. And those are, of course, extremely primitive. So the best thing I could say is we are right now with AI where we were with the internet in 94. Hopefully it stays controlled. I think it will. I'm actually optimistic on that front based on what I've seen astrologically. There's nothing in the chart that like stands out to me like some super dangerous thing that we're building. I would say there's definitely a higher probability that we'll be able to maintain control over this thing that we're creating. But it's going to be insanely powerful. I mean, I think that in 20, like if I was to just, this is just obviously more subjective now because it's just my perspective, but you know, if I was to think where we will be in 29 years from now with AI, is basically the internet itself will be like the library. So we only go to the library for like research. So no one will actually use the internet unless they're like doing research for something. And even then you would just use the AI, but you would only go to the back end. And basically the internet will just be so bot overridden. And we're seeing that now where it's the internet will basically just be like the brain. Not even the brain, but just the storage for the AI. And so it's just going to contain just a bunch of even garbage. It's just going to be this, you know, dumping ground of information and probably in languages we can't even read. So that's what the internet's going to be. So no one's going to actually like go and like click and go to a website and this kind of thing. I think what it's going to be is, aside from robotics, because I think we will have robotics, you know, robots walking around 29 years for sure, like you know, integrated with society. But even aside from that, like you'll just go to the AI, the Alexa or whatever it is, and you just talk to it and it'll just do what you want it to do and it'll do all the automations of it. So there will be no need to like go and like click and get information on a website or go order something online. I mean, all this stuff will just be exclusively the domain of the AI. So that's where I see it. And you obviously bring up a very important point, which is that we need to maintain control of this. We need, you know, these safety railings. You know, we need to make sure that this thing doesn't get out of control or doesn't get in the hands of some really ruthless people. So we got to do that. But again, I think it's leaning more towards we're going to. It looks more like we're just building a very powerful technology, the same way the internet was extremely powerful. And we're just at the very beginning of it.
Of all the signs and luminaries or planets, which ones do you associate most closely with AI?
Oh, Aquarius, for sure. And Uranus as a planet.
Are there any outliers or?
That's a good question. With AI specifically, Gemini and Mercury, because those are the language. So it's a program, you know, so it's beyond a language now. We're not even coding these things, but because it thinks, it communicates, it has its own mind. the Gemini, and you could add Sagittarius axes to that. So you're basically dealing with, yeah, so Aquarius, the main one, and then you would add Leo because it's the polarity. So Leo's opposite Aquarius. So Aquarius, Leo, and Gemini, Sagittarius. And those corresponding planets would be Uranus, Mercury, and Jupiter.
You know off the top of your head which metal associates with Uranus? That might be out of your bailiwick.
Yeah, it is. I don't know all the metals and things. I think I would guess aluminum because it rules planes and stuff, but that's just a wild guess.
Yeah, I did a quick search and the first thing I saw was uranium, but I'm with you. I had aluminum in mind, which I think is actually the closer association. But what's interesting here, if we look back at movies from, say, the early 90s, at the time, we didn't even know we were looking at references to AI. As a matter of fact, I can go all the way back, which Jason and I have done a number of times, to the first big budget sci-fi Forbidden Planet. It wasn't even until last year that I realized that they were referring to AI, but almost everything in Hollywood that has any association with AI and robots says it's going to be a problem, from Skynet to everybody knows. But you're of a mind that we'll get a handle on it, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're always dealing with probabilities and nothing's for certain. But from what I can see, there is a higher probability of us, yeah. Because again, there's nothing standing out to me as some kind of like, you know, we're building our own demise or, you know, something where we're building something that's going to end up destroying us or something like this. I could be missing something or, you know, and maybe, and I'm not saying there's not going to be any challenges. Obviously, there's challenges. I mean, with the internet, when the internet first came out, it was like only used for like black market and like illegal stuff and porn and like all this stuff. And, you know, it was because with every new technology, like you have this very, very powerful tool that, you know, you can do more with. And it's just like with every tool, like a gun, you know, like countries want to make guns illegal because they're responsible for death. But really at the end of the day, like it's a tool. And we've just been evolving these tools and just getting more and more advanced with these tools. So the stronger the tool, absolutely, the higher the risk of some bad stuff happening. No doubt. And with AI being the most powerful tool, absolutely. Astrologically, with the cycles, according to this, AI is something like four times more powerful than nukes. You know, if we were to kind of compare the cycles with like when we invented the nuke and that now we're inventing this. So again, like even with something like nuclear power and all this stuff, like we're living in a society where it is becoming more and more threatened because of the power that we hold as humans. And I hope that we can maintain this power for as long as possible, indefinitely, I hope, and that we can just keep figuring out ways to kind of harness that power. But yeah, the probability is absolutely there. And if we were to say like, what's the most dangerous thing on the planet right now? I mean, it's AI and it is supercomputing.
See, my issue is that where we are right now, when I begin to think about or talk in the way that we are now, underneath it all, there's a world takeover or an attempted world takeover going on. And I don't know how many people disagree with that, but it's what I see. And under the guise of everything that goes on, I think the most powerful places in the world are looking for control. And I think the people that don't get along are going to end up fighting for the scraps. And to pull it back to what I was about to say last time, as we pull into spring, there are a lot of really intelligent people that follow the kind of occult side of things that are expecting, I don't know, for lack of a better word, like a spring offensive, to pull it back to the old language of war, even though war is very different than it used to be back in those days. Do you feel like there's energies that reflect the idea that as we come into spring, there are going to be some monumental efforts, I guess I'll say, to really change things up?
Do you mean specifically with like war?
With power players, whatever it might be. And you keep hearing words like spring offensive. So that implies what it implies, not necessarily one event, but a big push to really start to facilitate change, whatever guise that comes in.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, yeah, definitely change. Whatever, yeah, so I totally agree with that. Whatever guys it, you know, it takes on. Definitely change there though, For sure. And that's because of the Mars retrograde. So again, that's why we're looking at like late February being significant, because it does mean that that fiery energy comes back, and it's coming back to basically now approach things differently than it was prior to the retrograde. So again, Mars went retrograde in early December. And so we were seeing leading up to that, like a lot of that fiery stuff. And so and that's what we see with planets. It's like the planet is full on, full steam ahead, direct. It's doing everything it's going to do. And then it's almost like life is saying, look, we can't just have everything going forward all the time. We need to go back. We need to revisit. We need to rest. We need to, you know, whatever, recoup. And that's what the Mars retrograde has recently done. But with Mars going direct, that means that that fiery energy starts to resume again, starts to move forward. You could see it as basically picking up where we left off, you know, late last year. But in a way, though, that's much more healthier and much more balanced. So I would, again, probabilistically, I would read this actually in the sense of something much more positive. For example, let's pretend Mars didn't go retrograde. Like with the way things, like with Mars continuing to go forward like that indefinitely, we would have for sure been in maybe some, I don't know, World War III type of scenario or something this year or something. But because Mars has gone retrograde, it's given us a chance collectively to recoup, to rethink, to reassess, to gather everything. That then tends to be less problematic. But because Mars is in the position that he's in, he's opposing Pluto. And as you know, Pluto is that deep transformative planet, you know, we've been talking about, and rules power dynamics and all this collectively. That's been part of this whole retrograde in terms of him being opposite Pluto during all this. And so that kind of resolves itself here at the end of April. Okay. So I agree 100% that there are things changing on that front, like for sure. But again, because of what I just said, I'm leaning more towards it being actually for the better, that had we not taking this time to reassess and kind of renegotiate whatever, redo and all this. If we hadn't done that, it would have been probably to the extreme of this, like, you know, negatively. But since we have, I'm actually seeing it as, okay, yes, there's serious stuff going on in the world. Yes, there's a lot of this. There's wars going on. There's people dying. There's all this stuff for sure, seriously happening. But this has now given us a chance to kind of now approach a little bit differently and for the better. And I think all that is in the springtime. It is astrologically. And it takes some time to work its way out there, like I said, through April. But once we get past April, we come off of that opposition to Mars. And so whatever was done in that front in terms of what needed to be rehashed, redone, reworked will have happened. Okay. But the transformations, the changes are absolutely there.
So when you look at all the old alchemical ideas, you often see that alchemical processes, the big ones, always begin in spring. They're absolutely tied to the sky clock. But you just mentioned Pluto. I mark 9/11 as really the coming out into the light of the kind of power players in our world going for total control. Pluto played a role in 9/11, didn't it? If I remember correctly. And by the way, that was right around the time they demoted it to try to get people to quit looking at it. Do you recall that?
Yeah. 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 Well, yeah, I recall that. In terms of Pluto being associated with 9/11, I know we talked about it before, but
right.
I never actually pulled up that chart. So let me just take the liberty to do that real quick.
And I'm pulling from memory here, but I'm because at the time when they were demoting it and Neil, my ass Tyson was out front doing this, all of a sudden, you know, there's less planets, which is a pretty big thing to do in the public eye, to do something like that. You know, there's a reason behind it. But the way I remember it, and this was long before you and I had met, was that Pluto actually played a role in all that. And then almost immediately after, they began to demote it. But my point is, to me, that's when the forces in our world came out into the light of day, almost saying, you know, we're too big to be stopped at this point.
Right. Yeah. And so that actually makes a lot of sense what you just said astrologically, because I just pulled up the September 11th chart here, 2001.
I believe there was a Gemini hook too, but anyhow, I don't want to interrupt.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Jupiter was in Gemini. That day, the moon was entering Gemini. The North Node was in Gemini. But based on what you're saying there, you know, I would say that the big thing there is that Saturn was opposite Pluto. Now, the Saturn cycle is 29 years. But if I was to try to describe Saturn opposite Pluto would be very much exactly what you just said, in the sense that, okay, again, Saturn represents the powers, the structures in existence, whatever they are. It's just those that have, who have, you know, achieved, accomplished, they're there at the top. Okay.
The hidden hand.
Yeah. And then you have Pluto, which is, you know, again, wanting to, doesn't want this ultimately, like Pluto itself. Pluto wants every individual really to be empowered, I believe. Like, it's not like Uranus, which is like, we want freedom for everybody and individuality and, like, you know, all this, you know, innovative, progressive stuff. But it's fundamentally that, you know, Pluto wants us to not give our power away to external things. And that's for every human being. So you have this dance, this opposition I'm looking at for this September 11th chart between Saturn opposite Pluto. So you have the powers that be, which are at the apex, because Pluto rules power and oppositions are the highest energy of the cycle. So it's like the full moon. It's like the apex of that cycle between those planets. So that's usually when the planet itself is like at its fullest in that context. So here we see Saturn is at its fullest in terms of its power and its structures, you know, just its power of its structures, but just it's the fullest of its power since the cycle would have just started about 15 years prior. Okay, so if we go back 15 years pre-2001, this was what would have started the power build in terms of whatever September 11th was specifically about. So we see the apex there, with Saturn being at the apex of its power cycle with Pluto. Looking at where Saturn and Pluto are now, we actually just started a power cycle about 3 years ago. So let me just get a little bit more precise. So we're not at the apex of it like 2011 was. Let's see.
The reason I pointed this out is to anchor our minds back in what happened at that point in time, which is really the beginning of everything's out in the open for people who know how to pay attention. How that shakes out the way you view these luminaries now is what I was getting at, based on what we just reestablished.
Sorry. Could you rephrase that a different way?
So we look back to affirm Pluto's role and the luminaries' role at 9/11, when these big world changes had gone on. And in my view, the modern marker of, okay, this is all out in the open now. So now when you look at where they are, keeping in mind what we just said about it, does that influence what you see with regard to Pluto? Yeah.
Yeah, I think I understand. Yeah, it's not the same. And I think that's what I'm suggesting too, because what you're identifying there is between the Saturn and Pluto dance. We just started. So let's think of it this way. So 2020, and this is crazy because I never thought of it this way, but you're absolutely right. Like, this is the Saturn-Pluto cycle. So 2020 was the beginning of the power dynamic.
And we saw what happened there. So, I mean, you're kind of hitting the pulse. Everyone knows what happened in 2020.
Yeah. So you've totally identified that. And I think we've identified it as Saturn and Pluto, because that is very much what this cycle is about. Because, you know, every planet has a cycle with itself and another planet. So in this case, it's the Saturn-Pluto, the power dynamics, the powers that be. That's a great, I'm definitely going to remember the Saturn and Pluto cycle being the powers that be sort of cycle. So when we get to 2027,
you're running the cycle forward between those two luminaries?
Yeah, exactly. So now we have a 29-year cycle that starts in 2020 with Saturn and Pluto. And now we're going to break it up into quarters, because the quarters are the most significant. And that includes the opposition we saw in 9/11. But all 90 degree and, you know, so every quarter for four quarters. So let's see where Saturn will be.
So that's a 7.25 years.
Yeah. Just to make sure I have the numbers exactly right, I want to look at it. And it's 2028. Okay. So 2028 is where we're expected to see a push. Okay. So this will be the first quarter square. So this is where it assembles. It starts to, like, it has to fight for it. So it's not easy to get it. It has to really start to implement it. So if we do, and this is, again, we're just kind of making a lot of, you know, just kind of probabilities here. But, you know, if we think about, okay, 2020, all right, so we know what that was. Okay, so that was the beginning of whatever power is trying to be established for the next 29 years. That's the beginning. Now, it's going to come to a major challenge to do that in 2028. It's going to be difficult for it to do that. but it's, you know, again, it's likely to succeed at least to some extent. To some extent, it's likely to succeed. And that's just the way squares are. There, a lot gets done, okay? But we would want to, of course, as individuals, try to be as powerful as we can during that time and try to minimize that as much as possible. But 2028 would be a attainment of power as sort of actions being taken in order to solidify the beginnings of 2020. Okay. Then we have the opposition, which we identified as the, what was the September 11th for that cycle at that time. And so for us in the current Saturn-Pluto cycle, that will be in 2035. Yeah. So again, I'm not predicting a September 11th type of event necessarily. But again, if we're dealing in the realm of probabilities and we're trying to find one, I would say that that's the highest probability, and it could very well deal with medical, you know, again, basically the seeds we saw get planted in 2020.
What was the date?
Well, if we want to try to get to the month, it's 2036, but we'd say here probably around the summer there.
Are you marking that as the beginning of a cycle or the ending of a cycle?
No. That's the apex. That's the apex. That's what September 11th was.
All right. And it's basically pointing this out because so many people see like 9 and 11. It gets used so much. But what I was kind of hinting at is there's a reason, because it's kind of like a calculation. Like you just mentioned when we were talking about Saturn and Pluto, the 29-year cycle. Well, 2 and 9 turns the 9 into an 11. That's 29 years. If we go back to the event where everything came out into the open, there was an association with Gemini. And of course, the twin towers, just all these occult things going on. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is because we are in a critical, critical year of change. And for me, I can't separate what I know about 9/11, what I know about 2020, and why such things would be done in the first place. To me, it is power vying for absolute control. So when we look at this year, that's kind of the foundation of where I'm coming from.
Yeah. So in that context, it's just slowly building power. It's not like...
So if we take from the end of February up into spring, and let's just include March. So, you know, mid-February to March, what's going on in the sky clock in that period of time? And for me, I'm reasonably sure that the true equinox, where actually night and day are truly equal, I think it will be on the 17th. I haven't looked at it. But almost certainly the Catholic Church gets it right every year with St. Patrick. St. Patrick's Day truly marks the equinox. Hint, hint, there's a reason for that. For Jason, it will be a day different, and I'll look it up later. But these are big sky clock markers. So if we take from mid-February to, let's just say, the end of March, what do you see going on above us?
Well, that's what I see, yeah. So, but if we want to get, right, so it's the Mars direct. Right. It's the Saturn going into Pisces. That's looking at things from last year coming into this year. We have eclipses, obviously. So March 14th, we have. So the March 14th will be the lunar eclipse. March 29th will be the solar eclipse. The solar eclipse isn't, we call it a solar eclipse in astrology because it's close to the nodes, the Rahu and Ketu points, but the March 29th is not visible, but it's still registered as an eclipse. So this is eclipse season. Of course, it's always very transformative, like we've talked about many, many times on the podcast. So it happens twice a year. We have the eclipses there in spring and in March. So to read into the significance of it, to see what's different about it, and to see what we can glean from it, we do have a lot of retrogrades there. So we're going to have Mercury and Venus retrograde at the same time. That doesn't happen very often in terms of them both being retrograde at the same time. It means that they both reached their farthest point from the sun that they do from our, you know, from our vantage point. And they just happen to be both at the farthest point now going through their retrogrades. So we're expecting this sense of really having to, again, be flexible, go back. There's a lot of things that we have to go back from the past and start to rework and reconfigure. With Venus, it involves specifically the past year. With Mercury, just the past 4 months. But still, nonetheless, having them both retrograde, it does create a lot of it's in Pisces. So it can create uncertainty, confusion. What's this? What's that? It's nebulousness, right? Like I've been saying, and that's confirmed by the Saturn going into Pisces. And of course the new moon that I said, you know, with the fast movers in Pisces in general. Okay, so that's March there. It's a little nebulous. It's retrograde. It's this, that. It's kind of there all over the place, kind of reevaluating all this kind of thing, adding to the eclipses, okay, where basically the north and south nodes have been. And this is now what I think is the most significant of this, which is that the north and south nodes are changing sign. Okay, now they're going to take some time to change sign, but this is the last eclipses before they change sign. So March are the last eclipses before the nodes change sign. So the north node's going to go into Aquarius, which is coming out of Pisces, and the south node's going to go into Leo, coming out of Virgo. What that means is basically the past 2 years, it's actually been really important to like navigate all this uncertainty. Okay. And there's probably been, you know, much more of this uncertainty in our own personal lives. It's been really important to like focus on our mental health and spiritual health, but collectively it's like, you know, a lot of navigating that uncertainty. So that's actually said to lift off once we get to the summertime. So what we see here astrologically, and by the way, that does start to now mid-year starts to put more emphasis on that Aquarius, on that innovative stuff. Okay, even though Saturn's left there, there's new things, like I said, still being established. But in regards to a lot of the uncertainty and maybe lostness and this or that kind of energy, it is very strong in March. But as we come out of March, it becomes very clear, and I would say clearer than it has been the past 2 years, being that the past 2 years has been particularly invoking that Pisces energy. And then once the North Node officially leaves Pisces, which will be in July, we should wrap up that kind of energy. So again, the way the spring looks is it looks like the Pisces is strong, the nebulousness in the clouds, the uncertainty, all this kind of thing, mixed with that forward movement of fiery Mars. Okay. So personally, I'm seeing it as a lot of things are actually getting resolved from the Mars side. So I'm actually expecting, like, I would say there's actually a very high probability that we start to resolve or at least start to figure out this whole Ukraine nonsense. We're already seeing with Gaza and things like this, this very likely to be resolved as well. So I'm seeing that as the Mars retrograde. And I think that once Mars goes direct, a lot of this is going to get implemented. And I think we'll see how important that Mars retrograde was to, again, clean up all of this too much Mars that we had just before the retrograde. In regards to the Pisces, it's the most difficult constellation to try to understand or try to describe. It rules the oceans. It rules, like I said, like those in need, and really like dissolution of, again, the established systems. Okay. So I'm seeing that, right? What we talked about earlier, the dissolution of a lot of the existing systems and structures.
Rigid structure.
Yeah, right. But March being that final kind of involvement of that. So make of that what you will. Again, astrology can only take us so far. In hindsight, we'll look back and like we've done and say, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense now. It's difficult to try to make something so abstract into something so tangible. But based on those things, I want for your audience, I want to, you know, share what I see astrologically and let everyone individually kind of make of that what you will. But that's what it looks like. And for me personally, it looks more like resolution with a mix, certainly, of like disillusionment, things being very unclear, dissolvements of things, but then things starting to get clearer, most certainly, as we get into mid-year, kind of out of the springtime, basically.
All right. Well, we're coming up on the top of the first hour. So what I want to do before we take a short break, come back for hour two, is I just want to list the dates for folks that the five outer planets are actually going to shift signs or thereabout. And the reason I think a lot of people are still iffy about whether there's anything to the sky clock influencing us. So I think if we list down the dates, people can just pay attention on their own and come to their own conclusions. But to me, I feel like we have a lot of opportunity as individuals and as groups this year to reform those rigid structures that were like locked into what they were up to this point. But Athan, we do have to take a break. Can we just quickly list the dates or roughly the time of year when the five planets will shift their signs?
Okay. You mean the fast movers or just all the sign changes we have?
The outers.
Oh, you mean like all the outers, like even into the future?
This year.
Oh, this year. Okay. So this year, the only outer planets changing sign are Saturn and Jupiter. Okay. Saturn's the structures. Saturn's going into Pisces, the oceans of life. Okay. That's the symbolism there.
Jupiter's June, July?
That's right. So Jupiter goes into Gemini June 7th. Saturn goes into Pisces February 23rd. Okay, those are those sign changes. Now, if you include the nodes in the list, the North Node will enter Aquarius in July. Oh, let me do it in order. The South Node will enter Leo in June, and the North Node will enter Aquarius in July. Okay, and the reason those dates are different is because we're using the actual size of the constellations for those that might have been expecting those dates to be the same. Okay, so those are four things. February 23rd for Saturn into watery Pisces. June 7th for expansive Jupiter to go into really practical and commerce Gemini. The South Node in expressive Leo, so karma to be resolved around self-expression starting June. And that's as close as specific as we can get because the nodes are moving. They're oscillating. And so there's no exact date, but in June. And then the North Node goes into progressive Aquarius, visionary Aquarius in July. Those are the outer planet sign changes.
All right. I think people using other methods might have a slightly different view. But my point here is the big boys, Saturn and Jupiter, near the end of June for Saturn, Feb 21st, around that time. Pay attention, see what's going on in the world, you know, sense it yourself. Is there an energy change that you can detect? And then the big boy, Jupiter, June, I think it's June 7th, around that time. And you can start to sense the energy changes. And the reason I think we don't even think it's possible, a lot of us, simply because we have not paid attention. It's kind of like when you look at something and you think what you know what it is and you don't pay attention to the details. It's a bit like that. But Athan, can you tell us where folks can find you and your work? And then we're going to take a short break.
And by the way, we should mention that Athan has run charts for both Donald Trump and Elon Musk that we're going to go over in hour two. So don't miss that. Go ahead, Athan.
Yeah, so Mastering the Zodiac is the name of the website. You can also Google it, Mastering the Zodiac. We've got all kinds of resources there. So we talked a lot today about the collective stuff, but what I do specialize in, what I think astrology is best used for, is personal growth and development. So on there, you can go and type in your birthday. If you know your time of birth, even better, you don't need it. But if you do, you'll see the sky exactly when you're born. So if you believe that we live in cycles, then the sky clock is nothing more than a clock. It's not like, I don't believe these planets are having some effect on us, me personally. I believe that we're just able to tell what time it is using this ancient tool. And so we can see where we're at in these cycles. We can tell what time it is, universally speaking. So you can type in your birth details, see the sky exactly as it was, because we're using the actual sky with true sidereal here, which you will not find in mainstream astrology. Type in your birth details, look at the sky when you were born, and there's going to be a description on what that might mean for you as a soul, as your life experiences, as your life path, as your personality, etc. See if it resonates. See if it resonates. If it does, great. There's all kinds of resources there. We have courses, we have readings, we have free videos, weekly forecasts, all kinds of stuff, articles, and it's all there for you at Mastering the Zodiac. And if not, like Crow said, I think we don't need astrology, okay? We don't need it. It's a tool. We don't need a tool, but it can be helpful. The most important thing is we're connected to nature and we're connected to our own cycles, because nature is a cycle. Our bodies are a cycle. We're already one with the cycle. So it's really just about listening to yourself, listening to your inner self, your true self, and living in accordance and with nature fundamentally. And I think that's really just my message. I really hope that we can all start to, myself included, live more in tune with nature. But astrology, true sidereal, is just an extension of that. And so if you want to see what the sky looked like and what that means for you, you can go to Mastering the Zodiac.
I think that's a big part of what we're about to do, getting back to nature, where all truth is proven and presented. I will say there's a lot of people in our community, I think, that have used Athan and gone over to communicate with Athan. And this is going to be a big year. And I think we have real opportunity to get a little more sanity back. At least I hope that's true. But we're going to take a short break. This has been Hour 1 of Episode 617. Hour 1 is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crrow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full episode, and they get access to all the forums, comments, threads. They can create the top levels. They can stream the two-hour film called Shoot the Moon anytime they want. A lot of people have been streaming it lately. It covers all my older telescope work on the moon, the luminaries, so-called UFOs, the lunar waves, and the first discovery of the so-called second sun, which I think is also going to start to be a bigger deal as we move forward in time here. With that, I hope to see everyone logged in as a member for hour two, and I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. We'll be back with hour two in just a couple minutes. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.